Hi, Ronan. Thanks for coming in today via Zoom. How are you?
Hey. Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm having a great day. I'm excited to talk to you and everyone in Wrangell.
Great. Well, we're excited too. So before we jump into Wrangell History Unlocked, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? You grew up here in Wrangell, right?
Yeah, that's right. I grew up two blocks from KSTK. My mother still lives in Wrangell. She's Alice Rooney. And I was born up at the old hospital in 1985 and grew up in Wrangell, went to Evergreen Elementary, Stickney Middle School, Wrangell High School, graduated in 2003. And ever since then, I sort of come around once in a while on trips. I'm basically a tourist at this point. I enjoy coming back for visits, usually in the summer. But I have not actually lived in Wrangell in over 20 years now.
And you're in Portland?
Yep, I'm just outside of Portland down here in Oregon.
And how's that area today?
Oh, you know, it's good. It's a nice life. I'm married. My wife and I have two little kids. We've got Rosemary, who's six, Conan, who's three. And it's been good to us. Here, you know, I live here in Oregon, and I spent all my free time studying my hometown back in Alaska. I am an Oregonian, but I still feel like an Alaskan at heart.
Great. So I understand your mother, who you mentioned is Alice Rooney, is somewhat of a historian herself, right? She's created and collected audio recordings on Wrangell's history while you were growing up, huh?
Yeah, you know, my mother is really cut out for that line of work. She's a social worker. And so professionally, her job was, you know, often visiting a lot of Wrangell's seniors and socializing, helping them out in their lives. And I'm just so lucky that a few years before I was born, she recorded some conversations with the late Bill Taylor, who told her incredible stories about Wrangell from the past, including Star of Bengal. And I was able to use some of those tapes in my podcast series, Rise and Fall of the Star of Bengal. So I still think my mother gave me the best piece of evidence I had in that whole piece. That was just really awesome to have. I'm happy to follow in her footsteps this way.
Yeah. And so would you say her interest and the stories she captured inspired you to create Wrangell History Unlocked?
Yeah, my mother's a huge impact on that. You know, also too, my father, Bob Rooney, who passed away back in 2007, I suppose it was. He was a real Wrangell old timer. He had come to Wrangell in the 1940s. And so in our family at the dinner table, you had me who was just a kid, you know, my mother in the middle, there was my dad, kind of an older guy. And we just talk about the people we knew. And I'd talk about someone and my dad would say, oh, I knew their grandpa. And my mom would say, oh, I knew their mom. And we were just a multi-generational household that cared so much about the community that I feel like this project is really an outgrowth of the kind of dinner table conversations we would have as a family about Wrangell.
Great. Yeah. So can you just elaborate a little more? What was that like growing up and listening to these stories of the community members that you knew or, you know, they knew, or maybe nobody really knew because it was far back?
Yeah, I grew up, I'd have to say, and I'll be real honest here, I'm almost 40. I really didn't appreciate what I was surrounded by in my youth. And that's classic tale of being young. You sometimes don't appreciate what is right next door to you. And yet I would soak it up and I would listen and I would get to see incredible pieces of Tlingit art and culture just by living in Wrangell, just being lucky enough to be right next to it. That when I left Wrangell, I started to appreciate it. I knew what I was missing. I knew what I had taken for granted. So a lot of this project is somewhat self-exploratory for me. It's a chance to go over the things I took for granted, the stories that I heard. And I always felt like, I wish we had more answers. It's a chance for me to go get answers and to share them with people who are also interested in those stories.
Awesome. So moving on to Wrangell's History Unlocked, it's a skillfully crafted podcast that's sound rich, I would say, with in-depth research. The website, you're welcome. The website as well is a wealth of information with pretty amazing images and links related to the stories. What I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this evolved in 2020 when the pandemic hit. And your first story was King Lear of Wrangell. Did you have a vision that what you started 4 years ago would turn into a podcast series with at least 15 stories?
I knew Wrangell had it in it. Wrangell has the stories, and there are great stories I haven't been able to write yet. Did I have it in myself? I didn't know. I knew I wanted to start somewhere, and so I started with King Lear, and I just expanded from there. And I always thought, if I'm not having fun, I'll stop doing this, and that's okay. I don't have any contract that says I have to keep doing these episodes. Nobody's forcing me. And I do this strictly as a hobby. This is really for my own enjoyment, and I like to share. So I could always walk away from it, but I haven't, because the response has been so moving and so positive. And it's gotten me in touch with people I haven't talked to for years. And I got to talk to my friends' parents, you know, that older generation who remember some of these things and themselves always had questions and wanted some answers. So I've stuck with it because it's been so fulfilling and so rewarding. I just want to keep doing this.
That's really awesome. And why did you start with King Lear? Was it more accessible to you than all the other stories, or why?
I really wanted to start with what became Christmas Bombardment. That story is still the one I think about every single day. I've done a lot of different stories. That's the one I think about every day. But I felt like my first time out the gate, I need some practice. I need to do some other episodes before I can work my way up to that. So King Lear is present for the bombardment of Wrangell in 1869. So I told his life story as a way of getting a little bit of practice in and learning some lessons about what does it take to produce these episodes. And he is now a main character in the series I have coming out right now called Strange Customs, which also takes place in Wrangell in the 1870s. This man called King Lear was a very influential part of the community's history. And he's got a kind of a strange name, but it's really his name and what people called him. And he acted like a king too. So I thought, what a fun, interesting character to start this conversation about Wrangell history with. And it's been so much fun.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that King Lear weaves in and out of all the future stories that you produced.
Yes.
Which is really cool. It's great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a bit like the Marvel comic universe. They're like, there's Iron Man, and oh, Spider-Man's in this too. And in Wrangell, it's like that too. These people reappear kind of when you least expect them, and that's fun for me to bring characters back that I've already talked about.
I was actually just thinking about that this morning, the Marvel.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, I noticed that you dig very deep into history to create your stories. One example is in the Star of Bengal, which was a ship that was built in Ireland, right?
That's right.
But you also bring the audience to India and trace the routes and locations that the Star of Bengal traversed, like Hawaii, before its fate near Wrangell. You also talk about the history in other locations that we visit in your stories. I'm curious Right. about your process here. How do you get all this information?
So what I think has opened doors to me that weren't open to previous generations of historians is that lots of old newspapers and government records have been scanned and put online for us to look at for free. And so in the past, someone doing a Star of Bengal story would have had a few newspapers perhaps, but they wouldn't have one computer terminal where they type in Star of Bengal and they get hundreds of papers from around the country. So that's a big piece of my process. The secret edge I think I have as a historian is that I've spent about 12 years now doing genealogy. And you see that in the way that I write about people. I really don't believe in one-dimensional characters. Everyone came from somewhere, and I want to know where you came from and who's your family, who are your kids. And then that gives me a better understanding of what you're invested in and why the stakes are so high and why this is actually really important. And then I tell the story. So my method is use the internet. There's lots there that was never there before, and use it to flesh out fully who a person is in their family, in their clan, in their community, and use that to tell the story too.
Great. And yeah, the internet, the birth of the internet is an
Right,
amazing thing.
absolutely.
Okay. And so here's the difficult part, I would think. What makes you decide on what to keep and what to cut out, which I know for myself, and I imagine maybe for you, can be difficult since history in a way is never ending, right?
Right. There's no one right answer. There's really no one right way to tell the Star of Bengal story. The analogy that I use is a core memory I have going back about 25 years when I was a teenager. I was involved in Wrangell's production of The Music Man. Joe Rizzo was our director, and I had no talent for singing or dancing, so I had no business really being on stage. But Joe Rizzo was very kind, and he said, "Well, you can be my spotlight operator." So I stood in the very back of the gymnasium behind the audience, and I had this big, powerful spotlight. And I got to put it on the lead actor when he's doing his solo. And then I got to go around and people are dancing. And I really feel today like that's what my job is as a historian. I have this powerful spotlight. I'm just looking for what's happening. And if I can find it, I put the beam right there. I don't write lines. I don't put words in people's mouth. I just show you what's happening from the past. So if I feel like I got it across, I used as much spotlight as I needed to, I'm good. More often than not, I feel like I wish I had more. I wish I could have found that thing I wanted to show the audience that was happening in that moment, but I just couldn't find it. It is tough, isn't it? It's tough knowing when to cut, when to put it in the final print. It's always a labor at the end to figure out what to do.
Oh, it sure is. And yeah, just I appreciate you talking about spotlights. It's kind of like zooming in. You know, you're zoomed out and then you zoom in and then you
Yeah.
move to another location or wherever the story takes you.
Absolutely. And there's no one right version of the story then, because you're looking over here, I'm looking over there. We're seeing the same thing, but different pieces of it. And so it allows multiple perspectives and a diversity of viewpoints on the same thing in the past.
Yes. And so, how do you know when a story is complete then?
If I've cried, if it has made me cry, I go, okay, that was good. I really want to feel like I got enough information that someone could come to this story and they would say, "Oh, I have this piece over here. He mentioned that thing. I actually know about that. I've got that." Because in Wrangell, that happens surprisingly all the time. Someone's got some piece of the story in a shoebox on their shelf and they didn't think anyone would care. And I'm very interested in it. I also want to produce episodes that are up to about an hour. That's just the goal for myself. So I sometimes come across wonderful little tangents I'd love to tell the audience about, but I have to keep focused on there is a central story here. I cannot take us wandering off the trail because I'm so intrigued by this shiny object. I have to keep focused on the heartbeat of the story, which is this person or this event that I'm trying to describe.
Oh, I can relate with that, especially. Okay, so then what drives you to keep on unlocking Wrangell's history?
I just talked to my friend John about this yesterday. And John Schenck has been involved in a number of my episodes. He's made trailers, he's lent his voice. I just had him do the voice of his great great grandfather. from the Star of Bengal story, and that was really fun. So what drives me to keep going is, I think it's a bit hard for me to describe. I can't stop at this point. I'm so interested in the story. I have multiple stories in the works, and every so often I come along and I sort of assess these different projects and I go, okay, is this one ready? Is this one ready for 2 months of grindstone work to get it out the door? Or do I need to save it for later? The thing that is rewarding to me about this is that I feel like I am sincerely connecting with people who are living that I get to know better through this. But I also feel like I'm really connecting with people from Wrangell's past who have gone. There's something about, I experienced this in genealogy too. There's something about studying the lives of these people and really kind of understanding them at that deep level that makes them feel less far away, makes them feel more present with us. I've researched stories knowing that there are certain people who have passed who would have loved to hear the information in the story. And that keeps me going because I feel like somehow they're going to get it. I'm going to solve this mystery, and this is justice for them too. It's rewarding on so many different levels. I hope to keep doing it for a long time.
Yeah, it's really cool. So
Thanks.
you mentioned the voices, the voice acting, and you have in your stories, there's definitely lots of characters, and I'm impressed with the voice acting as well. You even capture accents like John Muir's Scottish accent, right? So
Right.
how does that even work? What who played who? Are these real accents, you know, or can you talk about this for a little bit?
I think my John Muir is a little bit too close to Shrek. A decent Scottish accent. I'll do him again. His Wrangell adventures carry on. I think that part of the inspiration of doing the voices and telling the story is that I got bedtime stories read to me by my mother, and Bonnie Diversion read stories at the library when I was a kid, and they did voices. If you've got a little mouse talking in the book, you should sound like a mouse. And it's more fun, and you're having more fun as the storyteller doing stuff like that. I do imagine someday that I'm going to have a cast of actors that I could assign work to. I certainly could. At this point, I have no budget beyond myself. I have no grants. I have no government funding. I'm not a nonprofit. I'm just really an enthusiast. So some of the things that I've done, I've definitely thought, wow, if I had a few really good actors, I could pull off something amazing here. But as it is, I'm quite happy doing it myself or tapping into my friends who really came through in a big way with Star of Bengal. I had seven or eight friends record lines and text them to me, and I popped it right in, and that's what you hear in the production today.
That's pretty amazing. So, as I mentioned before, you include other communities' histories on the periphery as you tie in the pathways of your subjects, like John Carr, the fugitive who traveled up the West Coast and into Wrangell, which is all in your new true crime podcast, Strange Customs, right? Do you plan on focusing only on Wrangell, or do you think you might focus on other communities in the future as well?
The truth is about Wrangell History Unlocked is that the stories don't just take place in Wrangell. And that's the nature of Wrangell history. Some Wrangell history happens in Washington, D.C. Some Wrangell history happens out of Portland or Seattle or Victoria, British Columbia. Because Wrangell is today and in the past very connected to lots of other hubs. Even still, I am surprised at this point. I wasn't expecting this 4 years in. I've done a lot of history of Asian American labor, and I wasn't expecting there to be such a strong Asian influence in Wrangell history. And yet, the more I look at it, it's very strong because Wrangell is a port on the Pacific. And it's definitely a place where groups have come. And so I feel like Wrangell is actually a very international history. We had the Russians, we've got the British explorers, Spanish explorers. American settlers, French Canadian settlers. There's so many different groups that came through Wrangell and are still in Wrangell. And then you have this bedrock foundation of the indigenous culture in Wrangell that just really, you know, provides the foundation for telling the whole story of Wrangell. So what surprised me in doing this history is like how often to tell a story, I have to leave Wrangell. I have to leave and I have to tell you something about some other place. And then I can bring it back and say, okay, now here's how it affects this town again.
Yeah, just as you were saying, that's where the the shiny, the shiny
Yeah.
adventures are, yeah.
Yep.
So, how far back in history do you have knowledge of in Wrangell?
Oh, I mean, you know, Petroglyph Beach, those are at least 10,000-year-old rock carvings, which is phenomenal. I mean, I've traveled all over the United States, especially the West. I've been to Europe, I've been to Japan. I've seen some stuff. I've seen some old stuff. Wrangell has some really old stuff. And we've got more recorded history than many communities in Alaska. That's part of why I could do something like this, is that I just know there's the records to support this kind of research and this level of storytelling. There's a lot of documented stuff. With, you know, some of us who do the Wrangell history thing, we're like, okay, so it's like late 1700s. Captain Cook comes through Southeast Alaska and he sees Wrangell Island. He doesn't find the mouth of the Stikine, but he sees it. And so, like, is that the beginning? Or is it, you know, a few decades later, the British and the Russians sort of compete to build a fort near the mouth of the Stikine? Where does it really officially begin? I don't exactly know. I think it's open to debate. I think most of us who tell a Wrangell history story really start with the Tlingit. We start with the indigenous base layer that is continuous and unbroken in Wrangell in Southeast Alaska. And then you tell the story off of that.
Yeah, and as you also mentioned before too, is that you have all these other stories going that are planned in your head, or maybe you're working on them right now too. So I'm excited to hear about those.
Absolutely. You know, so I work in progress right now is Wrangell Institute. Last fall, I was working on Wrangell Institute and I sensed there was some interest. So I put some of the research I'd found on a website. You can find it at wranglehistoryunlocked.com/institute. It's one of my most trafficked web pages, and I haven't even produced a podcast episode about it yet. So I know that's very important, and that's been an interesting process of discovery. This series, Strange Customs, takes place in the 1870s, which is a really transformative time. It's the first decade under the United States. After Strange Customs comes the arrival of missionaries. So I'm going to cover the missionaries in the Wrangell Institute episode because there's really a continuous line from the arrival of missionaries to the first boarding school for indigenous children in Alaska under the United States in Fort Wrangell. Up through Sheldon Jackson and sort of the beginning of Indian boarding schools. So Wrangell is really an incredible place to tell that story, which is a very important national conversation right now here in the US and in Canada as well. So I'm excited to do that episode. I'm a little trepidatious. I know how important it is. I've learned a lot. I look forward to talking to more people in Wrangell about it as I work on the episode. And I'm excited to share it at some point when I feel like it's done.
Yeah, great. And then I mean, yes, that's definitely going to be a very important piece. And speaking of when it's done, how much time do you think on average, and I'm sure it varies with each story, how much time does it take for you from start to finish to produce a story?
Oh gosh, you know, let's tell my wife I only do about an hour a day, but realistically, I could spend hours on it. It's the kind of thing I could do until it's late at night and my eyes are fluttering and they start closing. But here's the payoff, and this, to use the Marvel example again, is that the more I've studied Wrangell history, I come into a new story I hadn't learned. I better understand the context. If you tell me a story from Wrangell 1874 now, I really understand that world because I have done this John Carr series. And so every iteration of Wrangell in the past, the more I can learn about just what that time was like, what the community even looked like, the better I can absorb new information as it comes along and make those connections.
Yeah. So I have one last question for you. We're going to jump back to Strange Customs, your most recent.
Sure.
So the last part of Strange Customs will be out, I believe, on February 29th, right?
Leap day, that's right.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's this Thursday. Is there anything you'd like to talk about with part three, which is the trial? We're ending with, I think, a trial.
That's right.
Is there anything you'd like to talk about without spoiling the end?
Well, how do you spoil the end of a history? I mean, it happened, everyone. It was public. I think about Strange Customs this way. Wrangell, could you imagine if someone came from down south to the beautiful little community of Wrangell and they had some sort of crooked criminal past and they came to Wrangell for a fresh start and they just did the same exact thing they had done before? That's the story of Strange Customs. It's a career criminal who comes up north to Alaska for a fresh start and just gets into the same old tricks. So part three comes out on Thursday, February 29th, and it is the gavel coming down. The criminals have been rounded up, put on a boat, sent to Portland. And this was fun for me. I work in Portland. I live outside of Portland. So this is the time when all the threads of power from the criminal justice system and the US Army all weave through Portland, Oregon. So you'll have to check it out and see how it goes.
Yes. And yeah, I noticed that, it's all the West Coast pretty much, all from south
Right.
to up here. Ronan, thank you so much for meeting with me. It was wonderful talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you. This is a real pleasure for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being on Talk on the Rock, and I hope the rest of the day is great for you.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.